at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Bicycle Talk, where I am here with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. I always start, or I have been starting my show recently, with a Ron's rant of the day. Every week I'd like to put a little something out there to just kind of an awareness to bicycles and also to people driving cars. Here's a big one. This one just drives me crazy. We see this a lot. Fran and I see this all the time. We'll be out on a ride, maybe two or three of us out for a ride, could be 10 or 12 of us out for a ride. We have a car behind us. We all get over. We give you plenty of room for the car to get by. And then a car is coming in the opposite direction, and the driver that is behind us takes this horrible chance of passing us all. And when they do, they risk having a head-on collision with the car coming in the other direction. The car coming in the other direction is almost always brought to a complete stop. We smile and wave to them because what else can you do?
They're even run off the road.
But the driver who is driving behind us, or the person in a car who is driving behind us, who just is so impatient to get around us, just, you know, wait 15 seconds, wait 20 seconds. You'll get around us. Wait until it's safe and that there's no one coming the other way and you can actually see where you're going. So that's my rant of the day.
Well, and the other problem is that person who's doing that Oreo thing, there being the creamy filling between the two cookies.
Yeah.
When they're doing that Oreo thing, there's a 3-foot rule. How can they do the 3-foot rule if they're trying to pass between a bunch of cyclists and a car on the other side?
Well, that does run into a problem.
And that's what are the chances that both of those cars are enormous? Pretty good, right? Because a lot of people have SUVs.
Right.
I'm helping you rant.
Yeah, thank you. It's good. You know, we rant. We are lovers of trucks, and trucks that are either pickup style or ones that have covers on the back, known as SUVs. They just seem to have really
made
cycling a much more difficult time for us.
We don't mind them if they follow the rules of the road and are respectful. But
I agree.
But you have to remember, whatever vehicle you're driving, your vehicle is potentially lethal to anyone, let alone cyclists. Even if you're annoyed by cyclists, car versus cyclist, you're going to win every time.
Yep.
And by winning, you're losing because somebody's going
to
die.
It's a large weapon. And it needs to, you know, you need to have some care when you're out there. You know, we're really friendly people. We just like to ride our bikes. That's all. So I have a guest this morning. This is really exciting. I have a guest. My guest is Eric Weiss. And Eric is here to talk to us about an upcoming event, which is very exciting because it falls into my love of the crazy sport of bicycle racing and cyclocross. And I put on a cyclocross race in Hartford on Sunday, so it was I'm fresh off of this. And
I swear I have a cousin named Eric Weiss.
You do, I think, don't you? Do you? You must.
I have. Bob,
you must.
I have Bobby Weiss, Marty Weiss, Adam Weiss.
You have all these Weiss. Jewish cousins. Yeah, yeah. It's a Weiss thing.
I went to Hebrew school with Eric Weiss.
Maybe you might have. It's all true. So Eric, thank you so much for coming.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here, and thank you for the invitation.
Oh, sure. Oh, we love to have people that are alive and kicking in the bicycle world and doing wonderful things for the bicycle world. So just one thing that I like to ask everyone who is a guest on this show is what I know you ride a bike because you're one of us. You're one of the brotherhood and you do ride a bike. And I want you to relate to me your first experience on a bicycle that you can remember.
Well, my earliest memory on a bicycle is the day my father finally let go of holding on to the back of my seat.
Oh my God, I have the same one.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And I guess it shouldn't be surprising that that should stand out so clearly. Mm. I think my dad probably spent 6 months running up and down our street holding on to the back of my bike. And I'm sure at the same time that I was perfectly capable of being on my own. But I just didn't have the confidence. But I do. My first memory is that day, the first day he let go, going to the end of my street, stopping, picking up the bike to turn it around because I didn't know how to turn yet.
Right.
And coming on the way back. And just before I got back to our house, I nearly took a header into a steel storm grate. And just saved it just in time. And I can, when I close my eyes, see my father's look of relief
Right.
When I, because, you know, this is the 1970s. I was not wearing a helmet, of course.
Of course not.
And I can sort of see the look of relief on his face when I saved myself from becoming a vegetable.
Right. Right. And it's a funny thing because, you know, you're hoping that it all, I remember doing this with my son and, you know, I just did it in the front yard because it was a softer fall because I knew it eventually would just tip over. And so that's how we started out with it. But it's really hard to do. It's really hard. Do you have kids?
I have a daughter who's 6 and.
Oh, have you been down this road yet?
We're in the middle of that road.
Okay.
And as opposed to people,
speak.
Yes,
so
exactly.
To
speak.
As opposed to people who are like the more mature age that the three of us are, who had training wheels, we're going
right.
The balance bike route. So
that's the right way to go.
Yeah. And so she figured out how to do the balance bike. I put the cranks and pedals back on and the chain back on her bike and said, well, just pretend it's still a balance bike.
Mm-hmm.
But while you're coasting, start pedaling. And she said, okay. And she looked like she was getting it. But one thing I hadn't counted on was she still didn't know how to do coaster brakes.
Yeah, those are tricky.
And it's a little counterintuitive.
Yeah.
And so there was a little incident this past spring, and she hasn't been on the bike in the last 4 or 5 months.
Oh, I have a very sad radio face here right now. That's too bad.
You know, she has so many friends who are confident on their bikes. I'm sure she'll be back on it pretty soon.
She'll get back on.
Yeah,
she'll get back on. I'm sure you'll encourage her.
And it's still a big part of her life because she and I go out with her on her WeHoo trailer.
Oh,
every weekend. So she's got her own drivetrain. She's helping, quote unquote, helping me get up the hills and stuff. So, and she still loves it. She prefers not having to steer and brake.
Not ready to be on her own yet.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. That's okay. It'll come. You know, I did the same thing. I had a trailer bike that I pulled behind my bike with Greg on the back, my son Greg on the back. And then we eventually graduated all the way up to, full size tandem, which was fun too.
Nice. 'Cause
we could actually really go places with that. It's fun. But it takes years. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about you and who you are and what you do and why you are here on the program today. So if you could give me some history.
Okay, I'd be happy to. So I guess the best way to start this is to explain that for 18 years, I was staff for the East Coast Greenway Alliance, which is the East Coast Greenway is a project that's been around for, well, we'll be celebrating our 25th anniversary of the founding of our organization late this year. But it wasn't until the last year or so that lots of people started learning about what the East Coast Greenway is. So I'm just off 18 years on staff, moved onto the advisory board, and for a good part of that, I was the director of Greenway development for the organization. Putting together a trail from the Canadian border to Key West, Florida, 2,900 miles, connecting cities along the eastern seaboard. And in that role, I had to do a lot of traveling, go to a lot of conferences, things like that. And I was at a conference one day and was talking with Richard Fries, who is...
Oh, I know Richard.
Yeah, he's quite the figure in New England and really around the world. Now the executive director of the Massachusetts Bicycle Coalition and known very widely as the English language voice of professional cyclocross.
Yes.
And I was complaining to him about how the North American Hand-Built Bike Show has never done a show in New England. And it would be such a good place for it. Because there's so much great history. You know, the North American bicycle industry began in New England. And a lot of its most important steps also happened in New England, titanium fabrication, carbon fabrication. And he said, Eric, stop whining and do something about it. So I created this event. I said, you know, you're right. People whine a lot. And if I don't want to hear other people whine, I certainly don't want other people hearing me whine.
Mm-hmm.
So I created this event. It's called the New England Builders Ball. And it is a hand-built bike show for frame builders who are creating custom-built bicycles in New England and other parts of the Northeast. And not just people making bike frames, but also people making components and accessories and garments. And the more you look, the more you see what people are doing regionally. People are, you know, people say that there's no more garment industry in New England, but it's not true. And if you come to the Builders Ball, you'll see. People don't know about the wonderful bikes that are actually manufactured here in New England, custom built. But if you come to the Builders Ball, if you're interested in that sort of thing, come on by and check it out. And components, accessories, even electronics are being manufactured here in New England.
I have been attending it over the years because it's affiliated with the Providence Bicycle, the Providence Cyclocross Festival.
Right.
And so I always love to go to it because of course I know everyone there too. I've been in the industry for a really long time, so I know everyone there. And I used to paint bicycles for Peter Weigel and Richard Sacks.
Excellent.
So for 2 years.
That's good pedigree.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, I have some history there too, and mm-hmm. and you know, I worked for Merlin Metalworks for a couple of years as a sales rep, and yeah, you know, and Chris Chance of Fat City Cycles. Chris grew up right here in Storrs, Connecticut.
I did not know that.
Yeah, his father was a professor here at UConn.
Oh.
So, yeah, Chris is, you know, I mean, I know everybody in the bike business. It's kind of funny. But these were all, the names that I just mentioned were all builders, and still are builders. Mm-hmm. Actually, Chris is back now, too.
That's
so
right.
I guess now I can say they're all still builders in the bicycle industry.
And I couldn't be prouder that those two fellows you mentioned, Richard Sacks and Peter Weigel, who are really globally among the deans of custom bicycle building, are going to be back at the show again. Which will be right here in the quiet corner of Connecticut this fall on September 30th.
Right. So that kind of covers the What is the Builder's Ball. That's a pretty cool thing. I had a friend a couple years ago. She was from Boston. She was designing some sort of a basket-type bag thing that went on the back of a rack, too, that was there a couple of years ago. And there's some creative stuff out there, and it's pretty neat. It's definitely very entertaining. So that's you created the show for showcasing the local people in this area.
That's
but right. Do you get people from outside of this area?
We get both attendees and exhibitors from outside of New England.
Mm-hmm.
We've had in the past builders come from upstate New York and Pennsylvania and New Jersey. And it's a real honor to have them. It's such a wonderful, it's a very small segment of the industry, but it's probably the most wonderful segment of the industry.
Yes.
And it's a real honor for me to produce a show that highlights what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, nobody's getting rich in this business.
Well, no. I am the living proof of that one, so I certainly understand that. But we love it. That's the thing that it's a funny thing about the bike business. You know, the people that are in the bike business are here because we just have this passion for cycling. And it's I get it. You know, you mentioned upstate New York, and that's the Ben Cerrada influence, because Ben Cerrada, also a hand-built custom frame builder that was in Saratoga Springs area,
that's exactly
right around there. He had a lot of spinoffs that came off of that particular operation.
Right, so it was a sad day when Cerrada stopped production, but part of his team turned around almost immediately to create a company called Saratoga Frameworks.
Right.
And then Saratoga Frameworks, the core of that, became the production end of a company called Number 22 Bicycle Company.
Oh, I don't know that one.
They're actually based in Canada, but the production is in upstate New York.
Oh, really?
They make wonderful cross bikes and adventure bikes and track bikes as well.
Huh, that's great. Well, then there's another builder that's out of Worcester area, Mike Zancanato. Do you know Mike?
I do.
And Mike is very involved in the cyclocross world.
Indeed.
And in the single speed world. And he also helps sponsor a single speed series that goes through New England. And Mike is a an often attendee at my races that I'm involved with, because he and his wife both like to race cross, and it's great. It's a really good thing, and he sponsors this big series, and you know, there's a free frame at the end. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool thing.
Yeah, Mike. It's funny. I was in my head. I was thinking, Mike is just like the nicest guy.
Oh, absolutely.
And then I realized so many of the people in the sort of bike culture in New England fit in that category. So you mentioned Peter Weigel, and it's so easy to say, oh, he's just the nicest guy you ever meet.
Oh, he is.
And I've got and we've got Brian Chapman of Chapman Cycles, who's right in Rhode Island, and oh my God, he's just the nicest guy you're ever going to meet. And then, on and on. And I think it might sound kind of silly, but it really is a wonderful family of bike makers and bike racers and just fans and zealots. in the northeastern U.S. and in New England in particular. So, yep, Mike Zancanato did our show last year. Unfortunately, he won't be at the show this year. But we'll get him back in 2017.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. Yeah. I'm sure you will. He's a good guy. He's very supportive of the industry in general.
Yes, indeed, and
a very good guy. So I'm going to my local bike shop, okay? And I'm thinking, well, you know, I heard this great show, a podcast, and on the radio, you know, and I'm thinking maybe I want to get one of these bikes. So what makes this bike so much different than the bikes that are all over the bike shop?
That's the key question, I think. That's an important
It's a big
one. Yeah. So I think the best parallel to draw to help explain it is, do you need to buy a suit?
Mm-hmm.
And do you wear suits a lot? Do you wear suits often enough that you want a suit that fits you perfectly and looks exactly the way you want it to? Now, you could go to Men's Warehouse or Joseph A. Bank or something like that,
mm-hmm,
and get a really good suit.
Right.
Totally solid. It'll do what you need.
Sure will.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. And there'll be a whole variety of different kinds of suits there. There'll be double-breasted suits and suits with collars of different sizes and wonderful variety, just like all the really solid bikes you'll see at an independent bicycle dealer from reputable makers and reputable dealers. But some people want to go get and have a custom suit made, or maybe have a couple custom suits because they're on their bike every day, mm-hmm, for a while. Or they've been biking their whole lives and they haven't been able to find one that fits them absolutely perfectly. So that's a lot of the audience that goes to a show like the Builders Ball and checks out all the bikes that are being made by custom builders and finds the builder who gets them.
Right.
You know, and it's kind of like finding a tailor or a custom suit maker, custom clothes maker.
Like the Warren Corporation in Stafford, Connecticut.
Oh, right. Okay, we have one right here. Yeah, we do.
Who really gets you and knows exactly what you want to do. And so, you know, you find a bike in an independent bike dealer that feels perfect from the waist down, but you've got a little, you know, your shoulders or your neck after 50 or 100 miles aren't perfect, and you can't get it dialed in perfectly. You know, those are the people who might want to go to a custom bike maker and say, these are the ways I like to ride. I go on long tours. I'm a randonneur. I'm a racer. I am a courier, what have you. And they'll measure every part of their body,
mm-hmm,
you know, parts that even your personal physician doesn't take a look at.
Don't get that close.
and build for you a machine that is perfect for not just your physical characteristics, but the way you like to ride.
Your style.
And what you're doing while you're riding.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I represent one of those people that just doesn't really work well on something straight out of the box. And I usually have to ride, if I am riding something that's what I call out of the box, I tend to have to ride a smaller frame than normal because I have a very short torso. And I have ridiculously long arms and ridiculously long legs to go along with the short torso. Mm. So I am a difficult fit.
Okay, so putting a longer stem on won't do it for you.
Putting a longer stem on doesn't help me. I actually need a shorter stem because my torso is so short that even though my arms are really long, I don't land right on the bike and I end up bending over too far with a long stem. So it's complicated. And I can ride out-of-the-box bikes, and I do. And but I've also had, I had a custom Richard Sachs and I had a custom Peter Weigel, and they were a lot different. And they were actually made, you know, back when I got into the bicycle world and was riding my bike a lot, it was back in the 70s, and there were a lot of bikes coming in out of Europe, and then the Japanese started bringing bikes into the country after that. But all the European bikes came with these, you know, really tall frames, you know, that would fit me fine for my legs. And they made them with incredibly short top tubes. And that's just the way they made them back then. And it's just the way it was done. So you could pick up a 58 centimeter or a 60 centimeter bike and would only have a 52 or 54 centimeter top tube on it, which gave you a very upright position. And I always questioned that because it was like, they fit me perfect. They were great. They were great because I like a 54 top tube. That's what I like to do. And a 58, 54 is a perfect size bike for me. But they can't, you can't find them anymore. You can't. But there's a number of reasons why. And being in the bicycle industry and knowing all about why compact frame design came in and all these crazy things that... you know, old curmudgeons like me say ruined the bike business. Everything is done for cost. Everything is done because it's cheaper to do it this way. It's more economical to produce mass produce this way. So that all changed. And so I could no longer buy a bike out of the box and be like perfect with it because everything that came with a 58 centimeter seat tube came with a 57 or 58 top tube, and I can't even see the handlebars, let alone reach them. So they're just too far away. So that's where this whole custom frame build comes in and works really nicely because you can get the bike to match your long femurs on your legs and then also address your short torso. And then the other thing, there's people that are built the other way around. They've got really short legs, really long torsos. So, and not every bike will fit them.
Yeah. And there's with that really excellent bike that you buy from your local bike shop, there's a range of ways that you can tweak the geometry by sliding the saddle backwards or forwards on the rails, or getting a slightly larger, longer stem or the angle of the stem, et cetera. But you can only take it so far.
Right.
Just like, if you're going to buy that suit off the rack and they offer you some tailoring, there's only so far they can tailor that suit that you've bought off the rack.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. That's a great analogy. I love the suit idea. That's good. And bikes are very particular and in other ways too, because there are different styles of riding, as you had mentioned earlier. You have people that just want to go out and ride their bike on a nice, gentle tour. They want to be super comfortable. They don't really want to, they're not racers, but they want a bike that performs well, too, at the same time. And there's a lot of, like you said, tweaks that you can make to make that happen.
Sure. Playing with the angles that the tubes are welded together, looking at different materials to make the frame. Steel, aluminum, titanium, carbon. We now have a bamboo bicycle fabricator in Boston, which is exciting.
I heard that.
And then even within those materials, there are so many different kinds of steel that can be used that each have their own characteristics, which could be helpful for different kinds of riding. And it's when you go to a custom frame builder and talk about how you like to ride and what you do when you're riding, why you ride, that professional can talk with you about the different types of materials and what would work best for you.
Right, Right, because, you know, carbon is not for everyone, aluminum is not for everyone, and steel is not for well, steel is for everyone. I'm gonna, I'm gonna
you
step,
are old school.
I'm gonna step right out there and say it. Yeah, steel is those of us who are, like I said, the curmudgeons of the bicycle industry, we have a statement that we make all the time, which is steel is real.
Yes, indeed.
And there is a characteristic to steel bicycles that is, that's just right. I don't know how else to put it, you know. And you know, I work for a company that manufactures carbon bicycles and aluminum bicycles, and they also manufacture steel bicycles. And one of those models that I sell has been in the line without any line change to it at all for 18 years.
That's remarkable.
And it still sells extremely well, especially in Boston, Providence, New York, all the big cities, mm-hmm. because they're durable, they're comfortable, they're predictable, and, you know, people don't want to steal them as much. So they have that going on, too. But, you know, steel just has I can't explain it. I guess it just has a characteristic to it. It's a ride feel, and it's hard to explain unless you've been on a bike for a long time and you've tried all the different bicycles out there. Mm. And, you know, I have days that I'd rather ride a steel bike than a carbon bike. I have days that I'd rather ride my carbon bike than my steel bike, but I have them both.
Yes, I'm the same way. I have aluminum, steel, carbon, and I have more bikes than I need, but not as many as I want. And depending on what I'm going to do, I'll pull a different bike out of the garage. And if I'm going out on my Sunday morning ride with my buddies, I'm pulling the carbon bike.
Oh, yes,
out.
You are, because there's going to be a little competitive nature to that ride.
And if I'm going out to run errands, I'll take one of my more compact bikes that has a rack, and maybe I've zip-tied a milk crate to the back of it.
Sure.
Or I'll just put the trailer on the back of the touring bike if I think I'm going to have a lot of stuff. And, you know, not everybody needs to have, you know, 15 bikes.
Right.
But it's
really
for, but it's good for consumers to know that, there are ways to scratch all of your itches.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't think I mentioned, you know, for people who do want to know more about how to address those options, they're certainly welcome to come by the Builder's Ball, which will be on September 30th at the Thompson Motor Speedway up in Thompson, Connecticut.
Right.
And we're really excited to make the move. Providence hosted the first 5 editions, and it was a really good place to have it. But ultimately, my exhibitors decided... let me backtrack for a second. The show has, as you mentioned, has always been associated with the Providence Cyclocross Festival.
Correct.
Which is one of our country's most prestigious cyclocross racing events. CrossFest this year also is moving to Thompson Motor Speedway.
Right.
And so I asked my exhibitors, what do you want to do? Should we keep it in Providence, where we know we get a good audience? But if we do it that weekend, we know that all the racers are going to be out in Thompson. Or should we follow the event and continue to ally ourselves with it? And it was a very resounding, yes, let's go to Thompson.
Oh, I think it's the right move. Yeah.
And this is such a beautiful part of the state.
Oh.
My wife grew up in Mansfield. And
oh, really?
So,
no kidding.
In Mansfield Depot. And, she was a faculty brat. Her father was a professor here for decades in anthropology and archaeology. And so I got to know this part of the state a little bit better through, visiting with her family. And also because the East Coast Greenway, which was my bread and butter for so long, goes right through here.
Right through here.
It goes through Sterling and Plainfield and Killingly and Putnam and Pomfret and...
And it is more complete now
Chaplin.
Than ever before.
And
we just opened a bridge down in Willimantic this past spring.
I know. It's been
very
exciting.
You know, this is kind of fun. I saw Mark and Chris Paquette there. Mark had come down. He's retired now.
He's in Vermont.
And he's living in Vermont. Yeah. And Mark came down, and Mark Paquette was the recreation director in Wyndham when he put in all the proposals for the funding for the Greenways, got really involved in this. And it took, you know, his entire career, really, to eventually have the finishing touches done right there in Willimantic. And I remember going to the first meeting where he was just putting a short stretch of it behind, well, kind of across from the golf course, I guess is probably the best way to put that. And there were people just screaming and shouting and saying, no, we don't want this here. This is a terrible thing, and it's going to bring crime and terrible things to our neighborhood. And you know, I'm like listening to this whole thing, and one of the business owners there was really adamant about how he didn't want it crossing his property, that this was his property, and he didn't want it there. And, you know, Mark had to explain to him with the state official that, no, it's not your property. It belongs to the Department of Transportation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's going in. And then that bridge went in, and that was, you know, a mile-long section of trail done. And then there was so much more to do. But now we can ride all the way out to East Hampton on one end, and then you can ride all the way up to the Pomfret-Putnam line right now. And there's a short section in Hampton which just haven't had the finish grate put a grate on the top of it. But
you can get over that with a good gravel grinder, though.
You can get over it with a good gravel grinder, yeah. Or a cyclocross bike.
That's right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, which yeah. is what we've always called them.
Or a mountain bike.
Or a mountain
or
bike.
Or a fat bike.
And or even my road bike, I can ride on that.
If but you're
that,
really
you know,
good at it.
It depends
yeah.
on, you know, your level of skill, I guess is what it is. But it's, you know, it's over 50 miles long now.
It's exciting.
From point to point. So
and worth
really
noting.
Exciting.
Worth noting that the East Coast Greenway itself, at a total of 2,900 miles long, is now 31% complete. So if you were to take a trip on the East Coast Greenway today, nearly a third of your trip, you would be on traffic-separated trails.
Wow.
Including through some of our biggest cities. You know,
right.
A trip on the East Coast Greenway in Manhattan, you're only on city streets for about 5-6 blocks.
Is wow. that right?
That's right.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And in the Bronx, it's something like 90% of our route through the Bronx is also on trails.
Wow.
And so
I've been on part of that. I think, does it go by City Island? Or it's near City Island?
It does. Yeah, it does currently go near City Island.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, I've been on it.
It's a great trip.
That's great. Yeah, and you know, it's that would be a dream, but I know it's not going to happen in my lifetime, but it would be really cool to be able to just get on your bike and ride to Florida.
Right, I was going to say, when can we go visit my parents?
And we could go visit your parents, right? And we could take we could just take the Greenway down.
Yeah, well, the really answer cool. is you can do it today, except you won't be entirely on traffic-separated facilities.
Right.
But the route that you'd be following is still the best route available. And it wouldn't be the fastest way to do it, but it's the route that the East Coast Greenway Alliance puts together in partnership with local officials and state officials and, you know, innumerable local activists mm-hmm. is put together to be a really solid tourism experience, not to make time.
Right.
So it goes by historic sites and scenic overlooks and it's designed to be a touristic experience.
Well, the section that goes through up here, especially the parts that go up through Hampton and into Pomfret and that area are just glorious.
Yeah, it's lovely.
It's just absolutely beautiful. And even the sections that go out to East Hampton, you know, you're going out through Lebanon. It's really pretty. In a couple of weeks, I'm not going to say this. We're going to start seeing colors on leaves. And
there are already some colors on leaves.
There are already some colors on leaves.
Yeah, dry summer did us in.
And if you haven't experienced the Greenway, you do it when it's fall and you get to see the beautiful colors. I mean, it's unbelievable. We live in just a treasure of a place here, and it's really nice. So if you're down visiting in stores, where does your wife, do they still live here, the parents?
No, she doesn't have family here anymore.
Oh, she doesn't.
But it, you know, it feels very comfortable for me to be here. And so I'm coming here from Providence. I'm on Route 44. Mm. And no matter how much time has passed since my last drive from Providence to come here, everything still looks so familiar. And it's like, oh, good. You know, Mansfield Supply still looks exactly the same. I love seeing that. And,
yeah.
And you know, passing through Ashford and, you know, the same local kid has put the TR in front of Ashford on the big sign at the,
yeah.
Yep. You know, it's like, oh,
I know.
It feels very familiar.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's like that out here. And the roads are just, they're spectacular. You know, there's endless amounts of back roads around here. There are some classic dirt roads around here, which are really fun. So if you're in the area with your bicycle at some point, you should like ring me up and I could take you on some roads that I'm sure you have not seen yet.
Well, thank you. I will take you up on that.
Yeah.
And that puts into mind another event that is being brought here to the Quiet Corner for the first time, which is Grand Fondo, New England.
Right.
And for those of your listeners who don't know what a Grand Fondo is, think of it as Grand Fondos are to bicycling what marathons are to running. So it's a giant group ride. You'll have less than 1% of the participants actually in it as competition. Just like in a marathon.
Right.
In a marathon, almost everybody there is doing it to challenge themselves. And the same is true for a Grand Fondo. So Grand Fondo New England has been run several times in association with the Cyclocross Festival.
Right.
But since the CrossFest is moving to Thompson, Connecticut, so is the Grand Fondo. And for the first time, it's not going to be an asphalt-only affair. There are a number of different routes that have been planned, and you can stay on asphalt the whole time if you want.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also choose routes that go on dirt roads.
I heard that.
Is it going to be spectacular?
Oh, I was up at Southbridge Bicycles last week, and I was talking to John about it, and he said, there's going to be dirt. And I went, really? He goes, Ron, you got to come. There's going to be dirt. You'll love it. You know, he knows I'm a fan of dirt roads. But I'm excited to see a Grand Fondo coming to northeastern Connecticut. I've been working on something in that direction recently also with another gentleman. And I'd like to see more of that because we have the perfect place. It doesn't get any better than this.
It's lovely. Between, you know, there's so many state parks with old fire roads running through and the small villages that seem so preserved in time and they all seem to have a really good bakery right in the middle, which is such, you know, oh, let's stop, get a cup of coffee and a muffin.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah, there's lots of opportunities for sure.
And because of the nature of this part of the state, you can do a ride that visits best parts of this part of Connecticut, but also really wonderful parts of Massachusetts and Rhode Island.
Right.
And so you can say you hit three states in one day on a really terrific bike ride.
Yeah. So what are the distances on the Fondo?
There's a variety of distances. There's the Grand Fondo, which is the full 100-mile ride. There's the Medio Fondo, which is a metric century, so that would be about 65, 67 miles. And then there's a small one they're calling the Piccolo Fondo.
The Piccolo, right.
That's right.
Right.
Staying with the Italian terms. And I think that one is something like 35 miles.
Yeah, they're usually somewhere around there. The company I work with is a co-sponsor of a four Fondo series. That is, two of them are right here in New England. One is in New York and one is Pennsylvania.
Aren't they going up to six next year?
They're going up to six next year. That's what they're talking about. So they're going to add a couple more onto that. But they're really popular. And there's usually really good food associated with them. That's
right.
This particular one. Tyler does one called the Farm to Fork Fondo, and it's all based around farmland and awareness to farmlands.
Excellent.
And it's pretty neat, you know, because so sometimes these fondos will have a theme to them often too. So I think it's great that they're putting a fondo along with the Cross Festival, and I know they have had that over Rhode Island over the last few years. Was it about 3 or 4 years ago when they started that?
I think that sounds about right. And each of those fondos has passed through at least a part of the Last Green Valley every year.
Hmm.
So touching Killingly, Putnam, that sort of thing.
Oh, there's some great stuff out
there.
Well,
you know, passing through the old mill villages, it brings people to life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we ride there all the time. That's kind of our, this is our backyard, our big backyard. Right. And we do ride there a lot because it's, there's just so many great things to see. There's a covered bridge that was constructed about 6 or 7 years ago now in Brooklyn, Connecticut, that was replacing a bridge out sign for many, many years. There was, the road was kind of closed because, well, no one really used it that much. And there's a post and beam builder that lives right on the edge of where the bridge is, and his father lives right down the street. And they cooked up a deal with the town, and they built this post and beam covered bridge.
Marvelous.
And it is, you know, it's another one of the reasons why you ride your bike, because you come around a corner and you start down a hill and you look ahead, you see this post and beam structure, and you ride through it and you can still smell the fresh timbers. And it's like, you know, it's such a wonderful sensation to be able to do that. It's really fun. So, you
it
know,
was
we
opened
have a lot
in
of
May
highlights.
Of 2010.
2010.
Yeah, May of 2010.
So I was, good guess.
Yeah.
6 or 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's pretty close.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's great. And it had not been, you know, there had been a road closed sign for a long time. And mm-hmm. I think that there was a budget issue or something. I don't know how they resolved it, but it was a really nice, nice thing to do. And it's great. It's great. So those are things that you see when you ride around in this corner of the state.
Yeah, it really is lovely.
Which are really special.
Yeah.
So, well, that's good. So that is going to be on, the cross race is, it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday event, correct?
That's right. So there are a smaller number of races on the Friday. Typically, they'll run the single speed race. They do what they're calling the cyclocross Madison. And for people who follow track cycling, they'll understand what that means. And
mm-hmm.
Basically, it's teams of two that have to swap off laps. And you can have a lot of fun doing that. It's great for spectators as well. There may be a collegiate race on Friday as well. And
oh, really?
One fun thing about the course in the new facility there at Thompson Speedway is that the last race of the day will actually be running right through the building where the builder's ball is being held. So
no kidding.
It's just spectacular.
Wow.
So two big bay doors will be open, and the course will cut right through. So you can come to the builder's ball, which opens at 7 p.m., and see some of the world's most beautiful bicycles, as well as bike-related garments, bags for bike touring or for bike commuting, lighting systems that are being actually fabricated here in New England, and even original artwork, bike-themed artwork, by regional artists. And while you're there, watch the racers cut right through the building. Just don't step through the tape.
I was going to say, that sounds a little ominous. That would be...
it's going to be...
That could be tricky.
It's going to be really wonderful. It's.
I'm sure they'll have it barriered up fine.
Yeah, it's going to be down at the end of the building, so nobody would have to cross it to get to any other exhibitors that are there in the ball. And then, so that last race will run from 7 to 7:45, roughly. Mm-hmm. So it's only the first 45 minutes of the Builder's Ball show. And it'll be followed by a podium presentation also there at the ball.
Nice.
And for people who are competing on Saturday and Sunday, early number pickup is also there in the Builder's Ball.
So the exhibits are going to stay up for the 3 days that you're
those,
there?
Those who want to stay there are welcome to.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are going to move out of the building into the more general expo area.
Oh, right, sure.
And some of them will be there for Friday night only.
Right.
But if you're going to be racing Saturday or Sunday and you want to pick up your number on Friday night to avoid long, long, long lines Saturday mm-hmm. morning, you'll have lots of eye candy to look at while you're waiting online to pick
nice.
Up your number, either for the racers or if you're registered for the Grand Fondo and you want to pick up your package for that. It'll all be at the Builder's Ball Friday night.
And the Builder's Ball, if I remember correctly, is a bit of a party also. So there,
yeah.
I believe there are cocktails and other various things going on there that are, and some food involved also.
Yeah, so the show is again being sponsored by Shimano, and our second sponsor is New Belgium, which is a brewery based in Colorado, And they sponsor a lot of bicycling events. Mm-hmm. And so there will be indeed beverages. The event itself, we call it the Builder's Ball, you know, to make people think of, you know, some sort of fancy event from the 1920s or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very relaxed affair. It feels more like an art gallery opening than anything else. So
yeah.
It's, you know, technically you might think it's a trade show because it's, you know, it's exhibit booths.
Well, it is. It is, yeah.
But it really feels more like you're at a gallery show.
Yeah.
So imagine going to an art gallery, but it's all about bicycles, and you get to run your hands all over the art.
Yeah.
and the artists, great. The artists are all there wanting to talk to you.
You know, I'm sure that some of the builders will do this. I think I remember seeing one a few years ago who brought a raw frame, you know, one that had been built, not painted yet,
mm-hmm.
just to show what's involved underneath all that paint. And I've got firsthand experience with that because I used to paint for two custom frame builders in the area. So I would see them when they were naked. And it's amazing. There's a lot of work that goes into building one of these.
Sure. And you can learn all about that at the ball from the builders themselves. And I think what you say is really important. One of the great things about getting a custom built bike is that you can really, when you go to a show like the Builder's Ball, you can really spend time looking at the quality of the welds and the brazing that happens. Because once they're painted or powder coated, it's not so easy to see the amazing quality that's being put into them.
I have to tell you my most famous paint story. I was painting for Richard Sachs many years ago, and this goes way back because we're going back to the New York Bicycle Show at Columbus Circle in New York. Oh, yeah, you don't even know. You weren't born yet.
Before my time.
You weren't born yet. So anyway, it used to be in New York City. The bike show in the United States was in New York City. It was at Columbus Circle, and it was always in it was usually in February. You know, it was usually in the winter before everything kind of kicked off in the snowbelt areas. And anyway, so I had been painting for Richard for about a year, and Richard was, you know, nervously, oh, I've got to get these bikes ready for the show, and they have to be perfect. And, you know, he was being very tense about it. And I said, don't worry, Richard, you know, just get me the frames, get them over here, I'll paint them up for you. And, well, they got to be just perfect, Ron. And it's like, have they not been yet? And no, but, you know, these are the show bikes. And, you know, so I had this one bike that came in, and I, you know, prepped it very carefully. And I was, my method of painting, there were other painters that were using a very thick paint called Emron back in the day, and it was bombproof. I mean, you could throw it against a wall and it wouldn't chip. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was wonderful paint as far as that went. It was also wonderful paint to put you in a casket. So it was very, very dangerous to work with. So I chose not to work with it. And I worked with my local paint supplier. And he turned me on to a different paint that he said was equally as durable, but it had some other characteristics to it, which was that, you know, you put on much thinner coats. And so anyway, long story short, I paint this bike up. I finished it up, four coats of paint, real thin coats, you know, looked really pretty. The lugs just popped on it. It was a nice job. It really came out nicely. I decaled it, I put clear coat over it, and then baked it in the oven. And as I pulled it out of the oven to take a look at it and examine it real carefully, making sure that I didn't have a run or a drip or a, you know, orange peel or whatever on it, because it's Richard's show bike, you know, mm-hmm. it had to be perfect. I'm looking really closely, and I see this impression in the seat tube on the bike that I had not seen before. And what it was there's a tubing manufacturer called Columbus, and Columbus, their emblem is a bird. It's like it's kind of a bird. It's like a silhouette of a bird. And they stamped it in the tube, and it came through in the paint because I put so many thin layers on.
Mm.
And you could actually see the Columbus bird in the tubing, in the paint as it came through. And I just looked at it and went, he's going to hate it or he's going to love it. But there it is. And I'm not repainting this thing. You know, there was a day to go before I brought him down. And he came up to my bicycle shop where I was painting at the time. And I said, Richard, I have to show you something. And I said, I hope you don't mind, but you got to check this out. And I pointed it out. And that was the highlight of the show.
Wow.
It was the highlight of the show. He couldn't believe it. Everybody that walked into his booth, he had to drag them over and say, look at this, look at this.
That's terrific.
And they're like, how did you do that? He said, Ron did it. You know, so that was like my big moment in bicycle painting. But but those are the things that you get with the, you know, custom built frames. There's little touches and little signatures that are out there.
Yeah. And being... And the finish work, I think, is a really important one to mention as well, because when you're working with a custom bike builder, whether they do their own paint in-house or they bring it to one of the specialty bicycle painters, such as you used to be,
mm-hmm.
You can have absolute control, well, to a point, of course.
To a point.
for what that bike is going to look like. And this is a bike that you're paying a premium for, so right. It should look the way you want it to look. And you'll have that greater control. And we, at the Builder's Ball, we always have exhibitors who put a focus on that finish work. And right. some of them, there are people in New England who make a living doing nothing but bicycle finish work.
Right.
So we'll have Hot Tubes at the show this year.
Right.
And really proud to show off what Toby has been doing for so long, and he's such a big part of bicycle culture. He has a racing team for juniors that end up in the pro ranks, and he became so well known for his amazing fabrication, and now he's doing carbon bicycle repair,
right?
And but a lot of finish work, and it's exciting to I'm just really jazzed thinking about what is he going to bring, because he's going to be there not to get people to hire him to build a frame. He's going to be there to get people to send him their damaged bikes.
Right.
And finish them properly.
Right.
And I'd encourage people to go to his website, which you can just Google Hot Tubes, and see some of the amazing finish work that his team does.
Toby does some really great stuff.
It's spectacular.
He really does.
It's really amazing.
It's exciting because he can really change the personality look of the bike.
And that changes how you feel about riding it as well.
Right, right. Yeah. It's so this is going to be a great event. And the date on this event is?
Friday, September 30th. Doors open at 7 p.m.
And it is at the Thompson Speedway in Thompson, Connecticut, correct?
That is correct. And people can learn all the details beyond what we've been talking about here today by visiting us on Facebook. Just do a search on New England Builders Ball on Facebook. Go to our website, which is newenglandbuildersball.com. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram.
Perfect. Perfect. My guest today has been Eric Weiss, who is with the Builders Ball in New England, an upcoming event, a really, really cool event. I encourage you to attend this. You're going to see a different world of bicycles that you have not seen before. If you are into bikes and you want to know more about bikes and how far you can go with them, well, you're going to see just some great stuff. It's also a great place to just hang out and meet other people that are like-minded and to get a good feel for the whole bicycle culture that you and I know so well, because we are part of it. We've been living and breathing it for years.
That's right, living it every day.
And it's, you know, it's just a fun thing. It's very relaxing. And while you're there, you can go to bike races. You can watch cyclocross races. Cyclocross races are really exciting. When you go to an event as large as this one, you're going to see some of the best riders in the country here. New England has a tendency to attract the best riders in the country and develop some of the best riders in the country. And I know because I've been involved with this for a long time, since 83 is when I started my first cross race. So we have a reputation of doing cross right here in New England. And we are also going to have in January, we are going to have the National Championships in Hartford, which is making me a little nervous and excited at the same time. I have nothing to do with it, and I almost had a shirt made last weekend that said, no, it is not me doing the Nationals, because that's how many people asked me, because everybody thinks it's me because of my background. And I, so anyway, cyclocross, the Builder's Ball, it's going to be a great weekend. And that weekend, one more time, is?
September 30th, October 1 and 2.
Great. My guest has been Eric Weiss. We are talking all about the Builder's Ball and cyclocross and the upcoming event. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. And if you want to comment on this or you're listening to it on podcast, you can reach us at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is 91.7 WHUS Storrs, Connecticut. Next show, Interbike.